We're going to move on to our panel discussion next there as well. So I'd invite anyone who's been invited up onto this panel to come and make your way up to the stage. I'll do a bit of introduction while people are coming up, just so that you know who is attending on this. Firstly, we are joined by Jackie Winning, who is the Chief Executive of the Forth Valley Sensory Centre. We've got Heather Valentine, who's the Community Development Officer from Guide Dog Scotland. Natalie McKechnie, and I'm really sorry if I've butchered that name, Team Manager of Sensory Services at Falkirk Council. Laura Walker, the Chief Executive of Visibility Scotland and Chair of the Scottish Visual Services Steering Group. And also we have with us Debbie McGregor, who is a community worker at Sight Scotland, and Amanda Whitfield, who she has worked with. And I'm going to start with Amanda and with Debbie. So firstly, welcome, Amanda and Debbie, and thanks for joining us today. Amanda first contacted Sight Scotland after being diagnosed with Stargardt disease in 2016, excuse me, and was put in touch with a community worker, Debbie McGregor. We're now going to hear directly from both of them and their lived experience there. So firstly, Amanda, lovely to see you again. Thank you for coming up here as well and sharing your story with us. I was wondering if you could begin by telling us a little bit about your eye condition and what your experience was around getting support.
So Stargardt disease is a genetic condition that affects in 1 to every 8 to 10,000 people worldwide. People with Stargardt disease have a build-up of fatty deposits on their macula called drusen. This is because our bodies can't dispose of vitamin A's properly. So the build-up of drusen eventually causes sight loss, and it's a progressive form of central vision loss. So this is also known as a juvenile condition. So I got in touch with Sight Scotland in 2020. So I was diagnosed as partially sighted in 2016. I got in touch with Sight Scotland when my eye condition started to deteriorate. So I went from partially sighted to severely visually impaired within a space of 4 years. I was on maternity when I got in touch with Debbie. So it was regarding my work condition, because I worked in the prison sector, I didn't know what my options were work-wise. So I reached out to Debbie, who gave me a bit of advice, but there was nothing really, because it was a new support service that we were just launching. She was going to look into stuff and get back to me on it. So Debbie reached out to me at my lowest point. I had just become, I was homeless. I was losing my eyesight, and I had a 7-month-old teething baby. So I was currently staying at a hotel when Debbie actually reached out to me. So she, godsend, but she reached out to me at the lowest point, that I needed a little bit of help and support. I didn't know what to do. So I think she's been massive for...
Yeah, thanks, Amanda. And Debbie, if I can bring you in here then now, can you describe to us what your role is as a community worker and how you helped Amanda in those initial stages and ongoing?
The service had only been open, the Family Wellbeing Service with Sight Scotland had only been open for 5 weeks. When Amanda reached out to us by email, we didn't actually at that point even have our national support line. And I was brutally honest with Amanda when she made her inquiry, and that I had come from the Royal Blind School as a residential care worker with the young people, and was like, what I know now, I didn't know then. And if I had, I would probably have been able to offer Amanda more support and signposting, but I still wanted to help. So initially, it was the inquiry regarding returning to work, reasonable adjustments, maybe getting in touch with her union and things like that. But I had kind of said, "Oh, leave it with me, and I'll go away and see what I can do." But I was able to signpost, make referrals, because Amanda's in West Lothian. I was able to look up, places I'd already been in touch with and made links with. I was able to get in touch with to make referrals for Amanda for support in her local area. We were able to offer help with magnification. And what happened was, Amanda had got in touch at the end of November, and then in the January, we received funding to have iPads that we could offer to people who were very isolated and would really benefit from the accessibility side of things and being able to get in touch with people during lockdown. And Amanda sprung to mind, and I contacted Amanda to say, would you benefit from this? Would you be interested? And Amanda told me her housing situation, didn't ask me for help with that, but I just, young mum, losing her sight, 7-month-old baby, on her own. And so I tried to do what I could, knowing the places I'd reached out to before, other charities, got in touch, and we managed to get Amanda into the house that she's in now.
Excellent. It's just completely unimaginable, your experience there, Amanda, there, but what impact would you say, personally, that support has had on you, and what difference has it made to you as you have adapted to your life with a severe visual impairment?
So I've done a total 360. I was at my lowest point, like I said, but I didn't know any way out of it. So we were during a pandemic. My family wanted to support me any way they could, but they were also having to adapt to a sight loss. But they couldn't. There was nothing they could do personally because obviously during a pandemic, so their hands were tied. So Debbie just gave me a wee bit of encouragement, a bit of boost, got me in touch with the right charities and organisations that I didn't know because I've never been through it before. So she obviously gave me a bit of spur to get on and keep pushing for my daughter. So obviously because I've never been through, I've never really known anybody with a sight loss before, this was completely new to me. So I had to adapt very quickly on my own, but I've not really been on my own. I've had this woman by my side all the time. So she's helped and support me, but also give my family support as well. So just my mum, my dad and my sister are my main three supporters. So even a bit of support for them, it's not just me, the family wellbeing services, it literally is for family. So it's gave me an encouragement to swallow my pride. I'm a very stubborn person. So I don't ask for help very often. I've had to swallow my pride and just ask for a bit of help. And I now can do this confidently because I've had Debbie pushing me every step of the way. And I've done a full 360 and I'm now working as a part of the policy team with Sight Scotland. So comfortable about my work. I thought there was no light at the end of the tunnel. I didn't know what my options were work-wise. I thought I wasn't going to be one of these people that anybody would want to employ because I didn't know my options for sight loss. So it's now, I've done a full 360, and I'm quite happy and confident. And my daughter's thriving now as well, so I've not held her back. I'm pushing her forward to do better like I am.
Excellent. I mean, it's amazing to hear that kind of story there. The last question that I have there is one maybe for you, Debbie, there. Picking up on a point that Amanda just raised there about her family getting some support there as well. How important do you feel that it is for people who are blind or partially sighted to have access to quality support in their communities, but also to empower people in their communities, whether that be family or other people there, to provide ongoing support?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the time, we get phone calls, and it's not just from the individual who has had the diagnosis or who is already experiencing a visual impairment and needing some advice or support. So it will also be family members, it will be a parent of a person or a daughter or a son or a family, a friend or a neighbour, and it's so important that people are aware of the support that's out there from all the different agencies, and we should all be working together so that we can signpost to each other. And if I can't help with something specific, that I know what's out there that will support the person in the best possible way. It is families just as much as the individuals that can often need the support.
Excellent. Thanks for that. I could be asking you lots of questions all day, but unfortunately I do have to move on, and not unfortunately, I have to move on and hear from these other wonderful people on the panel there as well there. But thank you both, Amanda and Debbie, for sharing your perspectives, but also Amanda, giving us insight into your own personal life there as well. It's a real privilege to be able to be let into those kind of stories there too. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
I'm going to engage the rest of the panel now as well. You'll be pleased to hear there as well. I'm going to start first with you, Laura. Laura, I wondered if you could tell us a little bit more about the work that's being undertaken in the rehab sector in Scotland, and any of the impact that you've seen so far.
Of course. Can you hear me okay? Hello. First of all, I'm just going to start with the role of a rehabilitation officer, worker, visual rehabilitation specialist. There's lots of names. This is a group of professionals who are trained to support and teach people who have a visual impairment to gain independence. They usually work with people over the age of 16 and upwards. If you work with a child, you're called a habilitation specialist. The key areas that you support in are orientation and mobility. So that could be teaching somebody how to locate landmarks, to navigate using their remaining vision, using technology, or indeed using a long cane. It's also about activities of daily living, how you manage in the home. So that could be kitchen skills, it could be making your bed, it could be budgeting. Then there's assistive technology and communications, and education and employment. So really a huge spectrum. And I tend to think of a visual rehabilitation specialist as a coach. It's about working with that person to find out that priority of need. Where would you find a rehab? They're usually based in the community and they're part of the local authority or the sensory impairment team or a sight loss charity. What's the pathway? Well, if you are having visual difficulties and you've gone to your high street optician, then you'd be referred through to your ophthalmologist if there was a serious visual condition. And at that point, you might be registered as sight impaired or severely sight impaired. If you're in the central belt, hopefully you'll be referred through to your patient support team. If you're in Grampian and Shetland, it is, Graham, I hope I get this right, hospital information support. We're close. And then north and south of that is your eye care clinic liaison officer who will take the person's details, and if that person requires rehab intervention, they would make a referral. If the person is registered, that should be an automatic referral through to the rehab team. The rehab team then carry out an initial assessment. If we were living in dreamland, where we want to get to, just as Hazel said, we would want that initial assessment to happen in 4 weeks. That's not what's happening just now. And from that initial assessment, the rehab worker creates a priority of needs. What's that person's greatest need? And where are they going to start that intervention? So that's if somebody has a visual condition that they've become aware of when they're at home. But then there's our stroke survivors, and that pathway is quite different. Stroke is our leading cause of disability in the UK. Every year there's 10,000 stroke survivors in Scotland. 50% of them will have a visual change, and about 20 to 30% of them will lose half their visual field. The current pathway is you'll be admitted to hospital. You might not see anybody about your vision. I am so pleased that the Scottish Government have published a stroke vision pathway, which really showcases where rehab should be, and it's at that acute and a post-acute stage. However, we do not have enough visual rehabilitation specialists to deal with that, and nor do we have a workforce who are trained to work with people who have a neurological visual need, not unless, of course, they've decided to go down that road independently. We know that early intervention and support is absolutely critical. If you follow me on Twitter, you'll hear me saying, right service, right time, hashtag, so please feel free to do it. But it's absolutely vital. We know that it reduces the financial pressure on NHS health and social care. But for the person, if they get the right support at the right time and their service choice, then they're going to have much better outcomes. Hazel McFarlane at the Alliance Sensory Hub, who you've just heard from, carried out a workforce survey in 2021, and this was due to the rising concern in Scotland as we were watching our pool of rehabs shrink. We had no course in Scotland. The only course to train people was down in England, and that made it really expensive for organisations to send anybody on it. We could see that the average age of rehab and HAB were over the age of 50. It also highlighted from that survey that there was waiting lists of people of over 100, which just isn't good enough. How can we ever get through that? So that's where the Scottish Visual Service Steering Group was born. This is a consortium of organisations who shared the same vision, and it was to evoke positive change. We realised that we couldn't do it independently and that we needed a bigger workforce. The group consists of Nadia Northway, who's the an orthoptist and a senior programme lead at Glasgow Cali Uni. Site Scotland, Colin Hilditch, the Sensory Hub, Hazel McFarlane, James Adams and Gillian Hillard from RNIB Scotland, Simon Labatt from RWPN, which is Rehab Workers Professional Network, Guide Dogs Scotland, and of course Visibility Scotland. The group decided that we had three aims. The first was to reinstate the course because we were at crisis point. We were not able to make service demand. But we realised that rehab was slightly out of date and that really we need to get the team up to speed and offer opportunities and learning beyond rehab and HAB, that actually in the sector there should be opportunities to be recognised and accredited for the knowledge that you have, which then means the person living with a visual impairment has service choice. And it was also to get the profession accredited and aligned with part of the allied health professional team. If I go back to that stroke pathway, if you've had a stroke and you have a visual impairment, it is likely that you will have other therapies. You might have physiotherapy, speech and language therapy, occupational therapy. How can you succeed in that if nobody is there from visual rehabilitation? How can you read what the speech and language therapist is giving you if you can't see to one side of your page? Last year, I spoke at this very conference about my own journey as a qualified rehab, and I shared my frustrations at the lack of connected pathways. And by that, I mean the pathways for service users, but also the pathways as a professional. 20 years ago, there was nowhere really to go. And also my frustration with out-of-date service deliveries. Last year at this conference, we also heard from two people with lived experience. And whilst the organisations were probably patting themselves on the back, it was quite devastating. They both spoke about how they had not received access to support. Social work had phoned them. They said they were doing fine, and social work put the phone down. That is just not good enough. We're not meeting the demand. There are over 200,000 people living with sight loss in Scotland. I don't think any service provider can deliver services to all those people independently. We have to work together. And that's exactly what the Scottish Visual Service Steering Group did. We decided that the only way we could tackle this was by joining forces. I am delighted to inform you that the course has been reinstated and the first cohort of 19 students began their journey in January. The steering group remain committed to creating modular learning and having this professional group recognised as part of the multidisciplinary team and allied health professional network. Every human has the right to receive necessary support to aid them to reach their goals and aspirations. The steering group have proven that collaboration is powerful and that many voices are stronger than one. We also aim to carry out a unique piece of research for this, as we want to identify the success of the support, but also where the unmet need is. What areas do we need to create modular learning for? Our vision must be to create an equal and accessible Scotland, and to do this, we must actually work together. Before I finish up, I just want to say a few thank yous. I want to say a massive thank you to the Alliance and Thomas Pocklington Trust for funding this course. Without that funding, the course would likely still be in a state of hiatus. I also want to have a massive thank you out to the Scottish Government's Sensory Loss Policy Team, aka Gillian Heavey and Susan Shippey, for listening to the steering group and giving their advice and support to make things happen. I also want to say a massive thank you to the Cross-Party Visual Impairment Group for listening to the steering group and writing a letter of support that went to the Scottish Government. It shows you that some of the systems work really, really well. I was going to finish with Helen Keeler's quote, but Mary Thurston stole it. Well done. So I'm going to finish off with Visibility's quote, and that is, you don't need sight to have vision. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Laura, for that. It's the peril of being later in the day is that, you know, your quotes end up getting taken, don't they, by someone else. So
it is a good one.
It is a good one that we can hear numerous times anyway, I'm sure. Jackie, I'd like to bring you in next there. So, Jackie, you're based in the Forth Valley area and also a trustee of Visionary UK. I've got a quick question for you before I hand over to you as well there. It's a big question, though. From your experience at both that local and national level, what do you see as the biggest benefits of community support, like we're discussing today?
Connectedness. Connectedness is the absolute benefit. And I have a quote as well, which no one has used.
It's not the Helen Keller one, is it?
No, it's certainly not. No, it's from 400 years ago, so it's certainly not Helen Keller. Around 400 years ago, the English poet John Donne used those immortal words, "No man is an island." And he was exploring a concept around the connectedness of people. People are not isolated islands. We're all part of something much larger. Everyone relies on other people to a certain extent in order to thrive and survive. I've been invited to chat to you today for a few minutes about the partnership work that we do each and every day at Forth Valley Sensory Centre. This partnership work connects us to our communities. I'd like to take the next few minutes to demonstrate how diverse and important our partnerships and communities are, and how sometimes one good thing leads to another. Forth Valley Sensory Centre is definitely not an island. By its very nature, it's a partnership organisation. The charity was established in 2003, and the centre opened its doors in 2006. We have a unique blend of statutory, third sector and private organisations located, co-located within our centre. And we all have the common purpose of supporting people who have a sensory loss. This is our connectedness. Our core centre partners are NHS Forth Valley, Falkirk and Stirling Health and Social Care Partnerships, RNID Scotland, RNID, and Sign Language Interactions. Our charity owns the building and rents the space out to other organisations. However, we're far more than simply a landlord. We facilitate a network within the centre, and it's our responsibility to cater to the needs of the communities that we work with. We welcome around 500 visitors a week to our centre. And we have two distinct centre user communities that visit our centre: people who are blind and partially sighted, and people who are deaf and have hearing loss. Both are equally as important to our charity, and both require different approaches from us to ensure that we meet their needs. For example, we constantly adapt our communication style and our environment so that we can be as inclusive as possible. We deliver over 30 added value social and educational groups, and topics range from Braille, cookery and IT, to our Sensory Singers Choir, our BSL OAP group and our youth group. We cater for people of all ages, and we encourage intergenerational activities such as providing work experience and volunteering opportunities for people and pupils from schools with sensory loss. Not all our activities take place within the centre, and this is one of the main reasons that it's important for us to build a strong network of partners in our local community. In our experience, it's very important to seek out varied and diverse range of external partners in order to broaden the scope of what we can deliver. So I'll illustrate that with an example. A few years ago, I met with an environment charity with an interest in the local food economy. At that time, we happened to be considering ways that we could refresh our cafe in the centre. Through discussion, we quickly identified a range of synergies between our organisations, and before we knew it, we were agreeing to jointly deliver a pop-up sensory restaurant. This restaurant was to highlight the work at the centre, but also to encourage local businesses and individuals to shop locally, seasonally, and to reduce food waste. The evening was a tremendous success, and as a result, in conjunction with some of the people who attended, we came up with the idea of creating a kitchen garden in an area that was previously disused near the centre. Through our partnership, we transformed the space into a community hub where we grew our own produce, and we used those ingredients in our cafe. The kitchen garden became so abundant that we were able to offer raised beds to the pupils from the nearby school for pupils who are deaf and blind. One of our partners put us in touch with an environment charity in England who had a spare industrial-sized composter. We arranged to transport this, and we installed it in our kitchen garden, And we were then able to recycle all our food waste from the cafe, and we turned that into compost, which we now give to people in the local community. As our charity took on more of an environment focus, we identified that a lot of information on climate change wasn't available in accessible formats for people who are blind or deaf. Thanks to some funding from Keep Scotland Beautiful, we set about tackling this issue for people of all ages. As a result, one outcome was a climate emergency project with the deaf and blind children from Windsor Park School. We worked with this group to deliver sensory food workshops and to create an accessible climate comic. The project won accolades for innovation, including one from the First Minister, and it was shared across Scotland. The pupils were awarded the coveted Blue Peter Green badges for their work, and our charity won the first ever Climate Conscious Award from SCBO. As a relatively small charity within the sight loss sector, it's incredibly important to develop networks with other sector organisations. One of the ways we do this is through our membership of Visionary UK. And I should at this point say I'm not a trustee of Visionary UK, but I am one of the Scottish reps, along with my colleague Leslie Carkery from Seascape. Visionary is a small but mighty membership organisation for local sight loss charities. It aims to create a world in which people living with sight loss can access the services they need at a local level, where and when they need them. The Visionary Network has over 116 local member organisations and 21 national partners, and it genuinely is a treasure trove of ideas, support and connections. Members can take advantage of a whole host of themed online discussions with a broad range of topics, ranging from dealing with the cost of living crisis to recruiting and training volunteers, or looking after staff wellbeing. Visionary also facilitates regular regional and country networks to encourage sight loss charity leaders to discuss areas of mutual interest. It's important to share ideas and learn from people locally, but also across a far wider network. And for this reason, Visionary arranges an annual two-day conference for all members and partners to get together and share invaluable insights. The next annual conference takes place on the 27th and 28th of September in Birmingham, and it truly is an event not to be missed. By way of summary, I think it would be fair to say that we live in an age where communities are never more needed. Without the connectedness we derive from our communities and partners, we simply wouldn't thrive and grow. The concept put forward by John Donne more than 400 years ago is just as relevant now as it was back then. Although I would change it slightly to say that no charity is an island. Thank you.
Thank you, Jackie, and apologies for elevating your status with Visionary there as well. But if nothing else, hopefully it makes people think about Visionary a little bit more, because it's a wonderful organisation that has a huge role to play in uniting us as a sector. I'm going to throw over to Heather now as well. So Heather, I'd love to hear a little bit more about your role in community development at Guide Dogs and anything else that you want to share with us today on that topic. Welcome.
Yes. Great, thank you. Can everybody hear me okay? Perfect. Yes, so I'm Heather. I'm the Community Development Officer for Scotland with Guide Dogs. So I'll be talking about my role a little bit later on, but just to start off with, I wanted to share some of Guide Dogs' services that you might not be as aware of. So at Guide Dogs, we don't just provide life-changing guide dogs, we also provide advice, skills, emotional and practical support for people and families living with sight loss to help them live actively, independently and well. So most people do know us because of our amazing dogs that we train to support people with sight loss to maintain their independence, but we do have a lot of other services as well. So for adults, many of our services do centre around information and advice. So we have our life skills pages available on our website, which focus on information such as personal care, cooking skills, advice on lighting, as well as information on eye conditions as well. So that's all freely available on the website for anybody to access. We also have our My Sighted Guide service, which is a really nice service where we match up sighted guides in the community with people that have sight loss. And they go out normally once a week together to do different activities to make sure that person is getting out and about in their community and increasing their independence and mobility. So it could be just going for a coffee and a walk. It could be trying a new hobby or a new skill. So our partnerships do some really interesting activities together, but just to note that service is currently closed to new applicants at the moment until we work through our current waiting list. Guide Dogs is also the largest provider of services for children and young people in the UK. So we work with families and children to provide a range of services around sight loss for children and the families that support them. So we have our My Time to Play service, which helps children with a visual impairment develop a broad range of skills through play. So they're all interactive activity sessions that focus on structured fun and supportive activities, including songs, craft activities and music. So it does allow those children to develop skills, but it also allows parents to link up for that peer support as well. We also have our customised bookshop, which is for people aged 0 to 25. So this is a service we provide where we can print books customised to children and young people's eye conditions. So they are sold at retail price, so people aren't paying any more for them as they would be for a standard book. But they're customised to that person's eye condition, so different size fonts, spacing, colouring, etc. So that's a really nice service as well. We also do technology and sensory equipment grants, and we do have buddy dogs for children as well. So these are family pets, so they're dogs that have gone through the guide dog training, but they've not quite made it to be a guide dog. So they're normally the ones that like cuddles or treats a little bit too much. And they will go to live with a family that has a child that has sight loss, and they'll provide that confidence for a child. So they act as an emotional support, and they do provide the opportunity for that child to learn about caring for a dog if they would like to apply for a guide dog in later life as well. And in terms of our guide dogs, there is no age limit on that service. So our youngest guide dog owner was 14 and our oldest was 98. So as long as that is something that would support your independence and mobility, then you can apply for the service, but you would have to meet the eligibility criteria and go through, obviously, the assessment and application process. So there's more information on our website and about how to apply for those services as well. So in terms of my role as Community Development Officer, this role was created last year, so as part of a review we did of our My Sighted Guide service to see how we could further extend support within the community. So I've been doing this role since last March, and community development officers work with external organisations to train their staff and volunteers in sight loss awareness and safe sighted guiding to make the community more accessible for people that are living with sight loss. So over the past year, we've had great interest in training, and I've worked with a variety of organisations, both local organisations and national organisations as well. So that includes hospitals and the NHS, so occupational therapists within hospitals and NHS welcome volunteers, universities and colleges, so specific courses like occupational therapy courses, medical students, so that they're getting that information before they actually go into practice and qualify. Also working with other charities, so Chest, Heart and Stroke Scotland, Stroke Scotland, Positive Pathways, Gig Buddies that support people with learning disabilities. So a lot of different charities, those are just a few. Also public venues, so training their front of house staff and visitor experience volunteers in sight loss awareness and sighted guidance, so they can help any visitors that come in that have sight loss. So I've worked with Edinburgh Zoo to train all their staff and volunteers, and also most of the galleries and museums across Glasgow, including the Gallery of Modern Art, the Riverside Transport Museum, and Kelvin Grove, to name a few of those as well. Also some businesses, so including Barrett Homes, to train their sales staff and advisors, and also local community groups, so walking groups, any sort of church or community groups that people with sight loss are part of, local transport, community transport networks and things like that as well. As well as this, I also provide friends and family training, both virtually and in person, to people's friends and family, so that they can get that bit of extra information and knowledge on how to support their loved one with sight loss to do the things that they want to do. We also do run Sighted Guide virtual training, so this is open to anyone from the public. And we know from research that Guide Dogs has done that 87% of people with sight loss said that improving the general public's guiding skills would have a positive or very positive impact on their lives. So people can sign up to our free online one-hour webinars for that as well. And we've had a really high uptake of that, which has been brilliant. So the community development officer role really does link into the iCare pathway, as Sandra mentioned this morning, even that initial visit to a hospital, being able to meet a volunteer at the door that has been trained in sighted guiding can make such a difference. And working with all these organisations in the community can provide that support right through the whole journey. So from when somebody goes to a clinic or a hospital, people are trained in sight loss awareness and sighted guiding, right through to when they're back out in the community doing the things they want to do, they can have that support anywhere they go. So ideally we would like everyone to be trained in sighted guiding. If anyone's interested in training for their organisation or knows anyone that would be interested, please do pass the information on and get in touch with us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Heather. I think you've got the advantage of the cute dogs in your organisation that everyone just loves as well. But I think those of you who know that I'm talking about, not only have you got dogs, you've got Nell as well. That ad of Nell going to school there that came out, I think, late last year, was it there as well? Absolute tearjerker too. And I think it's a great reminder of the breadth of services that Guide Dogs as an organisation do offer there as well. So thank you for sharing with that. Last but not least of our panel is Natalie. From a local authority perspective, we're really keen to get some insight into the support that you provide there as well and how you're working with others in the sector to create a positive environment.
Yeah, so can everyone hear me okay? Yeah. Okay, so I'm Natalie McKechnie and I am from Falkirk and Stirling Health and Social Care Partnership. I'd like to maybe start by saying I don't have a quote that anyone stole, but maybe Laura has stolen half my speech. So I will work through this, might be a little bit shorter than planned. So as I said, I'm part of the Sensory Services team for the Health and Social Care Partnership. Our team supports individuals and groups. We offer equipment from low vision aids all the way through to canes and things like that. We offer advice, guidance, support, and we try and improve. Part of our services is try and improve the lives of people with a sensory loss. The services' aims are to support people to reduce risk and build confidence and to promote independence at home and in the wider community. The sensory team provide training. We help raise awareness on sensory loss. We deliver British Sign Language, SVQ British Sign Language, in person or online. And we also deliver sighted guide training for people that we're working with, for their friends and family who feel that it would be beneficial for them. In our team, we support both adults and children, and within our team we have 3 visual impairment officers, 1 habilitation officer who solely works with children and young people throughout Falkirk and Stirling. We have a deaf rehabilitation officer, a social care officer and an assessor technician. We also have a specialised support worker service that supports adults with a sensory loss in their own home and in their local community, and that can be supporting them with a wide range of things. We also offer a translation service, and we have a daily duty worker service available for anyone who wants to come in and feel, you know, they may need support with translating a letter or, you know, support from the information on the letter to making phone calls. So we offer that level of support for people too. We also hold the registration for the CVIs for both Falkirk and Stirling Council, and we provide British Sign Language interpreters. We also manage that. We're partnership working. We work very closely with the Forth Valley Sensory Services team, and we're in the partnership with Stirling Council at the moment. We are based within Forth Valley Sensory Centre, and we work alongside NHS, Forth Valley Sensory Centre and other colleagues that are within the building. We have ophthalmology and audiology, as well as some social work teams, and we work very closely with the locality teams within Falkirk and Stirling, and we take this as a kind of joint approach. It's been successful in supporting, it's especially successful in supporting of early discharge from hospital. An example of the joint working that we do is we were contacted by our Home First team, by a social worker, for a client who was getting assessed by hospital staff. The staff believed that the patient lacked capacity, so our team went in, We've done a joint visit with the social worker and the client, and we assessed that the client had a hearing loss and indeed had capacity to make decisions. The patient was provided with equipment and staff were given advice in the hospital on how to maybe pick up these signs a bit more quickly. And that's just one example of someone who was getting deemed with no capacity, but the staff weren't trained enough to recognise that it was actually a hearing loss that they had. Our VI rehabilitation officers attend the ophthalmology registration clinic when a patient is being diagnosed with a sight loss and can provide support and advice at the clinic. We can also provide low vision aids to support the client and explain how our team can support the person when we receive the CVI form. We'll contact the client again to see if they would like further support from us, and if they do, then we would take that forward. We would then get them onto our social work system and we would make an appointment to go and do an assessment on them, and the rehab officer would determine what does that client need. Is it aids? Is it mobility training? And then they would work with that person until the person was happy with the progress. So we try to engage and reach local communities with advice and information from our social media platforms, where we share information and advice on things. It could be things from changes to the bin uplift to regular updates through COVID, NHS information, third sector information. So we share as much information as possible. We also create our own videos as well, and we have at the moment we're in the middle of creating videos from our VI rehabilitation officers on how to use some of these vision aids. So that will be getting posted soon. So the sensory team hold the budget for the See Hear strategy, and we have a joint lead with Forth Valley Sensory Centre. The leads for Falkirk are Jackie Winnan from the centre and Margaret Ferguson, who is the team manager for the sensory team. There are normally quarterly meetings that happen previously, but since the pandemic, these meetings have been held on Teams, and we invite local interested parties, and that can include RNIB, RNID, NHS Equalities, Ophthalmology and Audiology, and Education. Through the See Hear funding partnership with Forth Valley Sensory Centre, we've implemented various projects and groups, and we have a Voices Off class that runs, a lip reading class. We have an employability worker to support people with a sensory loss into gainful employment by supporting them with application forms, etc. We have a men's group that we're putting together at the moment, and the aim of that is peer support around mental health and wellbeing. We are always looking for new ideas and initiatives, and are currently in discussions with RNIB to offer hearing aid clinics in care homes, and the sensory team is providing training and learning for care home staff to raise awareness of the issues and ensure ongoing appropriate maintenance of aids, and to know how to access their enablement pathway into our team. So we're trying to give people the information of, if you recognise these, this is how you can get someone into our team if you feel they need that kind of support. So I hope that's given you a wee bit of better understanding of the sensory team and what we do, and thanks for listening.